I'm going to begin today by saying, last week, boy oh boy, was that rough for me. It was just rough as all get out, and I'm going to apologize and say I'm really sorry for the lack of direction, we'll say, for me, that I was kind of trying to put it together as I was going, because I'm not all that familiar with the liturgical with the day that we were looking at last week. Anyway, so to start, this is called tearing down or building up, and I'm going to start in James chapter 3, and I've just been thinking a lot about words, but think a lot about what I say, how I say it, where I say it, and all that sort of thing. And there've been a couple of ideas. One in particular that I'm going to talk about. That I don't know if I've mentioned it before, or if you've talked to somebody here about it, but we'll get into that a little bit later. James chapter 3 verses 1 and 2 says, "Let not many of you become teachers, my brethren, knowing that as such we will incur a stricter judgment. For we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well." And I stumbled a lot last week in my words. James isn't really talking about that part. I've been called a teacher, and I don't feel like that. You know, it's hard to accept that label for me. And it goes to like what Brian was talking about earlier, where I don't see that a lot of times because I don't have all the stuff put together and all of the, you know, the theological statements and the quotations by Dr. So-and-so and, you know, all the ibids and opposites that you should have when you're delivering your homily. You know, I don't have all of those. I don't have it all together. So, but James, who's the brother of Jesus, the younger brother of Jesus, says we all stumble in many ways. He recognizes this fact that all of us, he hasn't put himself on this platform, you know, hey, I'm the brother of Jesus Christ. I came out of the same womb that my brother did. I'm better than y'all. He said, no, we all, that's inclusive, we all stumble in many ways. You know, so I cannot look at someone else and say, look at that wretched sinner, how they have fallen. They stumble in a different way than I do. Someone else can look at me and, you know, I can tell them how I stumble. You know, I can tell them, yeah, I'm going to trip right now. Here we go. Because I recognize that. For we all stumble in many ways. If anyone does not stumble in what he says, he is a perfect man, able to bridle the whole body as well. So, and James isn't trying to leave out the ladies. You know, he's just, if we say that we don't stumble in what we say, we're just kidding ourselves. We're fooling ourselves. He goes on, James goes on to talk about the bit in the mouth of a horse. Consider how small that little piece of metal that is put in, like kind of like a nail, you know, a small rod that's put in the horse's mouth with a little piece of leather on either side, and you can force the horse to go in whatever direction you can lead. And maybe at first you have to like really let that horse know where you want to go. But eventually, it's just this minor little, just a minor little pulling back. It doesn't hurt the horse any. Maybe it hurts in the beginning. I don't know. But there, toward the end, as they've been trained, and it's the same thing for us as we train ourselves. And then something that Brian again mentioned, the anchor on a ship, and just this, relatively speaking, the size of an anchor compared to the size of a ship. That it can, you know, the tonnage that little anchor, comparatively speaking, how it can hold that ship. You maybe have to have a couple of anchors here and there, depending on the size of the ship. But again, you look at how much the ship weighs compared to how much the chain and the anchor weighs. And it's amazing that something so small, comparatively speaking, can keep something so large from moving. Well, James here mentions a small rudder on a great ship. And if you go to the Mariner's Museum, you can see some very large boats. You know, maybe you've seen, you know, if you've had the privilege of being at the shipyard or working at the shipyard and you can see how they're constructed, or you've been around, you see how great, how large the ship or the boat is, and again, how small the rudder is, comparatively speaking. But yet that small thing can make that ship go in any direction. It helps. You know, and the tillerman turns the wheel or moves, what do they call that thing on the back?
Tiller.
Yeah, the tiller. Moves it back and forth. You know, they spin the wheel or they move the tiller, and it makes the boat go in whatever direction they want it to go in, hopefully. And James compares that to our tongue. How small is our tongue compared to the rest of our body? But how many problems does it cause? You know, maybe it causes more problems than it does good things. It makes more trouble for us than it's worth. And if your hand causes you to sin, if your eye causes you to sin, if your tongue causes you to sin, you know, put a guard at my mouth, Lord, the psalmist said. You know, put a guard at my mouth so that I may be careful of what I say. May the words of my mouth and the meditation of my heart be acceptable in your sight, O God. James says that the tongue is a fire, and itself is set on fire from hell. Because very often, you know, for myself, I tend to be a more negative person. I think I'm a little bit more pessimistic than I am optimistic. I try to change that. I try to move toward being optimistic, looking for the good, seeing what is good. But in the Enneagram, as a challenger, I tend to focus and see what is wrong with the situation. And people can say, well, that's, you're being negative. You're a destroyer, you're not a builder. And it's like, no, I'm just seeing things in a different way. I see things as they are. And I'm trying to see things more as what they could be in that, to develop that challenger mentality, that challenger characteristic of who I am. In Ephesians 4:29, talking more about this tongue, more about what we say. Ephesians 4, verse 29 says, "Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification, according to the need of the moment, so that it will give grace to those who hear." Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth. Boy, oh boy. You know, there's a lot of unwholesome things that come out of this mouth of mine. Really, admittedly. You know, some of you have been witness to that. Your ears have been in my presence when I've said some unwholesome things. And usually it's meant in a very humorous, what I think is a humorous way. And I do tend to get quite a few laughs around the job site and other places that I am. But I'm trying to clean that up and be a little bit more. Yeah, sorry. I mean, yeah, there you go.
There is a God in heaven.
So, let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth. So that means, you know, okay, I'm thinking it. Well, if you thought it, you've said it. So go ahead and say it. No, you moron. You've thought it. Now put that guard at your mouth.
Yeah.
And don't let it proceed from your mouth. I've gotten in more trouble, not for saying something, but for how I've said it, the way that I've said it, the way that I've come across, sounding judgmental, sounding angry. And some of my words that I've chosen to use in people who are in authority over me. You know, when you say this idea is stupid, they take it as, you just called me stupid. No, I didn't call you stupid. I said your idea is stupid. That doesn't work for me. It doesn't get me any further. Even though I know it's true. So to learn to be more diplomatic, to choose the words in this challenger person that I am, to learn to choose the word. Let no unwholesome word proceed from your mouth, but only such a word as is good for edification. Edification means building up. Mm-hmm. You know, it to go in and say something in such a way as your idea is stupid tears that person down. They're not hearing what I'm saying.
Right.
Because they take it as I'm saying they're stupid. Maybe they are. Which is why they came up with a stupid idea to begin with. But, sorry.
Speak on it.
Preach it. Yeah, I just found out Garth is also an 8. My brother, yeah, right on. Yeah. Stick together, challenger. To speak what is useful for building somebody up, for building them up. You know, we've used this object lesson of a child and either a mother, a father, a teacher, someone who's important in that child's life to be saying things like, you're stupid, you'll never amount to anything, why can't you do better, you're so clumsy, you know, you're an oaf, you are so uncoordinated. What is your problem? What were you thinking? You know, we're not mad at you, but boy, are we disappointed. You know, I'm going to kill you. You know, those things that can really weigh on a kid. If it's done repeatedly over and over and over again, the words are like a hammer, destroying the child, exasperating them. So we come to a place where rather than taking someone down, rather than knocking them down, we build them up. We encourage them. I've used this before with people I've worked around where someone will say, you know, they just don't get it. They have someone working with them and they'll come and they'll complain and say, you know, they just don't get it. And I've said, well, what do they do correctly? What do they do right? And they'll say this, you know, whatever it is. And I'll say, well, why don't you encourage them in that? Ignore the other stuff for a little while and just to build them up in this area. Then add this other method of how you want to see things done. Bring correction. Focus on what they do well rather than destroying them. Because if you keep on focusing on what they don't do correctly, you take the risk of destroying them, and it's such a place where they stop doing anything.
Right.
So there's a training that goes on. Way back when, learning how to play the violin, the instructor was very good in doing those things, rather than tearing the student down, building him or her up, encouraging them, helping to develop the fingering on the violin and the ear and all of those things. Playing baseball was a little bit different, you know, thrown into the position that caused the least amount of damage on the team. You know, the first year I played Little League, I couldn't bat worth snot. You know, I was the strikeout king. The second year I played, I got hits. In almost every game, I'd get a hit, get on base. And I remember this one, I was just so proud because the coach's daughter used to, she kept the book. You know, the different plays and kept the book as far as what the teams had done, who was playing what positions, all those sorts of things. And this one game, I was so proud. I was 9 years old. And she said that I was responsible for every run that came in. It was either an RBI or I crossed the plate. And it was the first time I ever got a home run. Okay, it was an inside the park home run on errors. But I ran to first, they threw, I got to second, third base coach, I ran to third, and he's like this. It was a home run. That's how it counts.
A little faster in those days.
No, I wasn't. No. Yeah, let's talk about the little rudder and the great big ship. Yeah. So anyway, it was because the coach the second year was more encouraging. He was able to see some of the things that I was doing incorrectly as far as my stance, as far as the position, how I was holding the bat, how I was holding my body, and he was able to encourage me. One of the fellows that I work with coaches girls softball, and he's able to do that. You know, he was telling me this one, he was working out with a couple of the girls, and there was one in particular that was running the bases, and she wasn't running correctly. And he said, "Do you have a cell phone?" "Yeah." I said, "All right, where do you keep it?" "Well, it's in my pocket." "Okay, answer the phone." "Huh?" "Just answer the phone." "What do you do when you answer the phone?" She's like, "Okay, put it back in your pocket." "Okay. Now what if the phone's in the other pocket? What do? Answer the phone." He's like, "Okay, when you're running, I want you to answer the phone." "I want you to answer the phone." And he'll use those kinds of things when he's working with these girls. Different object lessons. And the guy is great. He really is. You know, we talk about things and that.
Yeah.
But those that are the words that are for edification, for building up, for encouraging, admonishing. Proverbs 15:4. There's just two more scriptures we're going to go to. This one. Proverbs 15:4 says, "A soothing tongue is a tree of life, but perversion in it crushes the spirit." Our words can cause pain, frustration. Our words can cause discouragement. Or they can bring healing. They can bring correction or direction. They can bring determination. Correction, yeah. Not having been a parent, but being around people in a position of leadership, to be able to come to a place of, you know, I'm really good at tearing the coworker down. You know, why are you doing it like this? Watch. Keep your eyes over here. Watch this. You know, asking why, like if we're supposed to be digging a trench and you've got two guys over there, you know, doing the county job, leaning on the shovel, saying, "Let me see that for a second." Just ripping it out of their hands and, you know, digging through the trench, digging a little bit, getting all the dirt out, and then taking it back and throwing it out. "I just want to make sure it works. It's not broken." You know, well, sometimes that's okay to do, but sometimes it's not. People don't know how to take that. But our words can cause pain or frustration. They can cause discouragement. One of my friends was working with a young teenager whose dad abandoned the family. There was a divorce involved. And the dad's never been around all that much. And so this guy that I know was trying to help him out. You know, the kid needed to work on his bike. And he's out there just not really knowing what to do. So my buddy goes out there and says, "Well, here's the tools that you need to use." Watches how he's doing it. He says, "No, here, you've got to do it this way." So taking that role of a father or a decent uncle, a man in the life that can show him how to do some things. And it's like we see this generation, you know, talking about kids coming in and wanting to be mechanics and not having zero aptitude even, for let alone knowing how to check the oil. Check the transmission fluid, let alone knowing how to take a lug nut off. Yet they want to be mechanics. They want to tune their cars. So this young teenager has grown up, and he's graduated high school, still trying to figure out what he wants to do with his life. And he's at that stage that most of us were, at least a lot of fellas, where we know more than any adult in the room. That's we know more than anybody else. And so it's one of those instances where kid has a question. The guy says, "Well, this is what you have to do. Here are the tools. You know, let's look it up. This is what's wrong. Here's what you got to do. Fix it." "Yeah, well, my buddy said..." "Do you see what your buddy drives?" "Yeah, but..." "Okay, fine. I don't know anything." Next thing you know, the kid's coming back. "Oh, no, I told you." So we want to build people up. We want to encourage them. Sometimes it's a lost cause, maybe. Or there's someone else that they can mold that person. Somebody else can move them along. Maybe we can only take someone as far as they can go. Maybe that person's not meant to be a mechanic. Maybe that person's meant to be something else. Maybe he's supposed to just see everything that needs to be done, and he's the writer. You know, he writes out what needs to be done on the vehicle, but can't be hands-on. A soothing tongue is a tree of life, but perversion in it crushes the spirit. One thing that we recognize is if we have been crushed in spirit, the Lord brings healing. He brings edification for those of us who have been crushed in spirit. We even sing that song, "You draw close to the brokenhearted, you draw near to the crushed in spirit." The smoldering wick he will not snuff out. So if we have received that, you know, someone that I know real close who went into the military going through boot camp and had some issues with what he was going through. And one of the things, you know, even not having been through that, to try to say, encourage and look for the positive and to say, look, you're going through this right now so that when you are on the field of battle, you know how to respond. Mm-hmm. They don't hate you. Right. They're trying to show you how good you can be and that you can do these things.
Right.
And how to trust and how to rely and to work as a team. So just keep going. Just keep going. Mm-hmm. And if you can put up with that, right? I guess you can put up with just about anything, depending on where you are.
Almost.
Yeah. Unless you're an eight. And then you can't. Yeah. So Proverbs 18:21, last verse. Proverbs 18:21. Death and life are in the power of the tongue, and those who love it will eat its fruit. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Things that we say can bring life or they can bring death within a person's emotional state, within a person's spirit. We can, you know, and I've seen it happen in my own life. Growing up, to cut people down, you know, do the cut downs and the put downs. You know, you had to be able to do that. You had to be able to pick something out of a person's appearance, speech, intelligence, whatever it was, nationality, race. You had to be able to do a put down. And that's where my sarcasm and that sort of thing came into play. To be, you know, fairly decent. And I guess that's how, you know, grabbing a shovel and saying, well, I guess it works. You know, it's not broken after all. But putting people down it's really easy for me. Death and life are in the power of the tongue. Those who love it will eat its fruit. So we can either eat the fruit of life by being an encourager, being one that builds people up, or we can be one who eats the fruit of death. You want to eat fresh fruit or rotten fruit? You know? Fermented fruit's okay, I think, but not rotten. Words which kill or destroy versus words which bring life. And I heard a story. It was a little blurb that they do on the radio in between the news and the program that I happen to be listening to. You know, they do those little kind of the encouraging word of the day or the feel-good story of the day. And this one happened to be where a teacher had run out of pencils. It was a day where the kids were supposed to be taking a test, and some of the kids didn't have pencils, and she didn't have any extras. And she asked if any of the kids, the other kids, had any extra pencils that the other students could use. And there was one little boy that had a few, but he didn't want to give them up at first. And then he thought about it. He's like, okay, yeah, they can use my pencils. And he gave them to the teacher, and the teacher looked at him and was really amazed by this. The child's mother had taken those pencils and with a little marker had written encouraging things You know, you're great. You're awesome. You're smart enough. You can figure this out. You know, different things that would be building up the kid. So that when he pulled out the pencil, and we've heard the stories about, you know, moms or dads writing a little note on the 3x5 card and putting it in with the lunch so that there's something positive that the kid can see. And I just was just amazed at this simple gesture. And I sent it to Anna. And I was like, I would think this would be a great idea. So she checked with her teacher, or with the principal or someone higher up, one of the people higher up in the school, I don't know who they are, and got the okay and said, yeah, that would be a good thing to do.
Cool.
You know? So we talked about, well, what kind of things would we put on these pencils to encourage kids? It's like, you don't have to have it, you know, no Bible verses, don't, you know, just keep it safe, keep it simple, just encouraging words to build the kid up. Because there's a lot of kids in her class that don't get that. They don't get any encouragement. All they get is negative, if they get anything at all. Maybe all they get is from their cell phones and their TVs and their friends. That's all they get. They don't get any encouraging words other than maybe from Anna. Mm-hmm. Or if the Andersons happen to be there. Mm-hmm. You know?
Just, mostly Joan.
Yeah, mostly Joan. Oh, yeah, because I could see you over there going, you idiot. You fool. You fool. Yeah, with your science lab coat on.
I'll shape them up one way or
the other. One way or the other. You're going to get this through your skull. Stand up, yeah. But I don't know if she's done it, doing it. Yeah, because we've talked about it a couple of times. So that the next time they do their testing, to just hand out the pencils like that for the kids and just... It's something, it's inexpensive, and it's an easy thing to do to help a kid.
Just like on menus where that one cafeteria worker put encouraging words on bananas.
Yeah, that was cool. Did you hear about that? She took bananas that were still had the peel on them and took her Sharpie and just wrote, you know, simple things. You know, have a great day, you know. Again, things that were more encouraging and that sort of thing. So that, you know, the kids pick up the banana, and some of them maybe don't. It's like, all right, I'm just going to eat the banana. I don't care. And other ones, it may be something that, mm-hmm. that spurs something within them. So
yeah.
This is something, I guess, it's more for me because, you know.
I don't think so.
I need to be more of an encourager than a builder rather than a destroyer. Build people up rather than tear them down. And Father, I thank you that you are gentle, but that you are also firm when we need to be dealt with in a firm way. I thank you that you allow those who have been crushed in spirit to come to you, to be encouraged. I'm reminded of the song from the late 80s, The Warrior is a Child. They don't know that I go running home when I fall down. Inside this armor, the warrior is a child. Though we're all adults here, we still have that inner child. And even as we may have that, others that we come into contact on a daily basis, those who are iron to us, who rub us the wrong way, who there's just friction. And maybe it's easy for us to see things in a negative light. Help us to be a people that recognizes those who have been crushed in spirit, those who have been hurt by what they've heard, by what others have told them. Help us just to be friendly people more and more. The gentle answer turns away wrath. But but it's that word that's spoken in anger or rashly, hurriedly, hastefully. Those words bring about nothing but more trouble. Help each of us to put a guard to our mouths, to say those things that are encouraging, yes, useful for building up. So I think we want to gather around our brother Jeff.
Yeah.
Huh?
Should I move?
Where are we going to meet? If you move, where are we going to meet?
Exactly. Up there.
We'll meet outside?
Yeah, that'd be good.
Yeah. So we're probably going to miss you. No.